québécois. Donc, on se retrouve le 28 mars 2024 et je vous dis donc, je vous souhaite une belle fin de journée et une belle fin de semaine et puis donc à la prochaine.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jojage in the Ganiagaha language and Munyang in Anishinaabe Moan, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end in English and in French. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, February 22nd, 2024. On tonight's show, my guests include an Australian circus troupe with humble beginnings, finds fans and support in Montreal. Gravity and Other Myths is relaunching their sold-out show, The Mirror, at La Tohu this week.
We're a group of mates in Adelaide. We're all teenagers and we're all just hanging out doing circus. As kind of a recreational activity after school, but we really loved it. So we decided not to hang up the boots and we founded the company and we started making shows and the rest is history, I guess.
Anarchist theater artist Norman Navratsky returns to the story of Marussia Nikiforova on a somber anniversary.
Maybe this will help us understand what's going on out there, maybe help inspire us about what needs to be done to change things, to make the world a better place. Because that's what Marussia Nikiforova was all about. You know, she was fighting for people who have nothing.
And the poet who saved Iran, a Montreal writer, explores the myths and romances within the work of ancient Persian poet Ferdowsi in the new play, The Keeper.
Sometimes we just are here to tell a story, and just the good story in itself has a value. You don't have to preach anything at times, you don't have to do anything, but just let people sit down and enjoy a story. So connect with another place and time, that's essential for me. And also I think to reflect on themselves, to see how stories have shaped their own lives.
Just a reminder, you can follow us for updates, images of our guests and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. If you're looking for something to do this weekend, do check out The Mirror at La Tohu. We'll find out more about that in just a moment. The Flood by Imago Theatre continues at Centaur Theatre until the 25th of February. I caught it last weekend and I love the show. It's going to have you reaching for the history books and going on Wikipedia. It is set in a prison in the basement of the St. Lawrence Market in Toronto. A very old historic building, which is kind of like Marche Atwater today, where people take food tours and go for grub and pea meal bacon sandwiches. But there's a very dark history to it. And Leah Simone Bowen's story really encapsulates all kinds of different, well, you could call it an intersectional play, because it's talking about the experiences of different women within the prison system. And based on the talkback I attended, and there's one after every show, it really resonated with people on a lot of levels. So it's a very appropriate show to see. Presented by Imago. You'll head to Centaur Theater to get tickets and more information. And also our guest from last week, Paul, who's a storytelling show about all the ways he almost died throughout his lives. I think it's called 9 Lives, 8 Near Misses. It is at Mainline Theater a couple more times this weekend. Head to Mainline Theater's website to check out more. On to our first guest of the evening. Well, I'm still buzzing from the opening of The Mirror at La Tohu, the city's premier circus destination. It was last night in St. Michel. Australian troupe Gravity and Other Myths performed their show to sold-out crowds at Maria Complètement Silk last summer. But after a short visit to Le Diamant Theatre in Quebec City earlier this month, The Mirror is getting a run at La Tohu. It opens the venue's 2024 season. We have 8 acrobats and 1 singer exploring entertainment, connection, and self-representation in a contemporary piece that is pretty simple yet very layered. It uses lighting and sound to its full advantage. It employs selfie sticks, cameras, a proscenium arch, a radio, and an LED wall. The tones run from somber to ecstatically silly, and I really loved it. I reached the show's associate designer, Lachlan Bins, to talk about the troupe's origins and what inspired this reflective show. He is one of the founders of Gravity and Other Myths. I spoke with Lachlan earlier this week. He was in Adelaide, Australia, where it is late summer and already next morning. Welcome, Lachlan, to Upstage. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So we're reaching you in Adelaide right now, where it is significantly far ahead in the future. And that's where you guys are originally from. Tell me about the start of your troupe and how you guys got started.
I'm one of the founders of Gravity and Other Myths. I've been with the company for, 2024? That makes nearly 15 years now. So I think September 2009, we founded it. We were a group of mates in Adelaide. We were all teenagers and we were all just hanging out doing circus. As kind of a recreational activity after school, but we really loved it. So we decided not to hang up the boots and we founded the company and we started making shows and the rest is history, I guess. The people enjoyed the shows and then we started taking the shows further and further away from Adelaide, our home city, to other countries and to other festivals around the world. And I think The Mirror, the show that's in Montreal at the moment, is our 6th or 7th show. So in between 2009 and now, we've been busy building and training and growing the company and inviting new people into the company. And it's grown from I think there were 7 of us originally. We lost a few, we gained a few, we lost a few, we gained a few more. And now there's, I think, about 25 acrobats, some administration staff, some technical support, all scattered around the world. Some of them are in Montreal. Some of us are in Adelaide right now. Some are based in Berlin. So we're a pretty scattered group, but we're all connected through the work and through touring and through making circus.
Can you, when you look back to starting off just a bunch of friends playing around, as you said, like teenagers just kind of hanging out, like has what the company is today surpassed kind of like your wildest dreams?
I don't even know if I had an idea about what the company could become back then. It was simply something that I really loved doing. So at a certain point we started to have a little bit more direction, and it certainly has surpassed my expectations based on kind of where we are now. But when, like I said, when we were just starting, it was just fun, and it was just something I love to do with my closest friends. And that quality has certainly remained at the core of GOM, at the core of our company, in all of our works, in the way we operate, the way we train, the way we perform, the content that we put on stage. It's all about that kind of mateship and play and having fun and enjoying working with a close group of people. So,
and how do you remain, like, how do you keep that sense of intimacy and the working of a close group when you've expanded so much, not to like a Cirque du Soleil level, but to have right. 3 different bases, you know, people in Berlin, people in Montreal, people in Adelaide. There's a lot of tentacles.
Yeah. Heaps of tentacles. We're a bit of a behemoth sometimes. I think we just make a really concerted effort to have, we use the phrase called commitment to chemistry. We're really committed to the kind of chemistry of this group and making sure it's right. So when you bring new people in, you have to go through a really thorough casting process where actually people's physical skills and attributes are not as important as their personality and how they fit in. And getting to know people is more important than watching their show reels. So that's kind of how we do it as we grow. But like I said, we connect with people that have a real shared passion for acrobatics and kind of shared values around play and fun and competition and training. If you get that first part right, the rest takes care of itself. There's plenty of times where we don't disagree and we butt heads like all close families, but generally we get pretty good.
I can only imagine that a circus spat involves maybe some acrobatics of some sort as you kind of work it out. You hash it out.
It's often about acrobatics. We'll rarely do acrobatics when we're arguing.
Lachlan, you just mentioned that, honestly, you sound like someone who's putting together the team that's going up to the International Space Station. Like, this is what NASA talks about when they're selecting astronauts. It's like, well, we need people who know the math and stuff and can fly things. But like, are these humble people who communicate well and know 10 languages? That's a key factor, like the human element.
A lot of organizations could learn a thing or two about that. I think when you set out to do something important or some have a long journey with a group of people, getting that part right at the beginning just makes the rest of it so much easier.
I'm speaking with Lachlan Binns, who is one of the founders of Gravity and Other Myths. They're presenting the Miera at La Tohu, opening this week and running until March. I wanted to ask about the fact that you had a show here last summer, The Pulse. It was ambitious. It was beautiful. It was also at La Tohu. How does that feel like to be putting on a show not less than a year later in Montreal, which is regarded as a capital of circus for so many around the world?
Yeah, Montreal's a real, it's a real highlight for us whenever we get to go there. We've taken a bunch of our shows. I remember the first time I got to perform in Montreal, we did tours of the circus facility. We went to ENC, the circus school. We visited, I don't think the Fingers space was around then, but we visited all the kind of the circus sites and we hung out with all these artists and we saw shows in the festival and just connecting with this part of the world. Especially at that time, especially during the circus festival, was incredible for us as young artists. And then we've come back, and every time we come back, it's kind of the same feeling. We love it there. It's almost a second home for us now. We love performing at La Tohu. And the Pulse is our biggest show in terms of acrobats on stage. To be said, there's also a 30 voice choir in that show, so that felt like a kind of show that could fill a space like Tohu, and kind of it. That show doesn't often get purpose built venues that can fit a show like that in it. All of our shows, it must be said, they do need bigger venues that are purpose built for circus. We often run into the problem of looking up and going, that light's pretty close to us. when we're doing all our towers and throws and kind of higher level stuff, we're always kind of looking up at the ceiling. So it's really nice to come to a space where you can actually just breathe and look forward at the audience and not have to worry about any of that because it's purpose built for circus.
Yeah, there were a lot of teetering moments in The Pulse where I was like, can they go any higher? Like, that is intense. And then also, like, the acrobats are building, but there's also a choir of children on the ground, on the stage, like, are surrounding them. Like, there were so many moments that kind of made you gasp. So people might have had the privilege of seeing The Pulse last summer, but were gearing up to see The Miera. And this is an interesting concept because, like, this is like high-level circus, like asking big questions of things, not just there to shock and entertain. You're looking at entertainment itself and like how people consume things. Tell me more about some of the thematics you're pulling on as the show was getting developed.
Well, the show was kind of seeded a few years ago. We were interested in making a show that was targeted for perhaps a bit more of a late night adult audience. So that was the initial concept, was doing something a little bit more cabaret, something that was inspired by those variety shows or late night cabarets. Through that process, we started to talk about things like body image and how you see yourself and how others see you and the things you do to make yourself look a certain way, the things you do to make yourself look a certain way when you look in the mirror. So it's all about making yourself a certain thing for others, for the eyes of other people when they're watching you, the things you do to entertain them. It's so intrinsic as a circus performer. It's got such a rich and deep history of entertainment and kind of traditional circus structures and costumes and all these elements that go into making a circus show. So it just felt like the right kind of content to attack in a way. And we also, I mean, our company predominantly is group acrobatics, and we lift each other, we throw each other, we touch each other, we do all sorts of things with our bodies. So our bodies and what they look like and what they can do is such a strong part of acrobatics. And we kind of ended up of finding ways of doing things. I think one key part of it is when you try to look sexy or beautiful, often it comes off wrong. But when you just do something functional, or you do something where through the act of doing that thing, it just is beautiful, or it just does have that kind of sexy aesthetic to it. So we were really trying to find ways to do that kind of thing where we weren't parading around the stage, although we do that sometimes. You will find there's some surprise moments in the show where we do it.
Yeah.
Because you can't make a show about it without just doing it. We also, in this day and age, couldn't do a show about entertainment and voyeurism and looking at yourself without that touching on things like social media and technology and phones and screens and how we look at that. And we also looked at kind of pop culture, entertainment and music and video and all that kind of stuff. So you'll see all that kind of permeated through the whole thing.
We're speaking with Lachlan Binns, who's one of the original founders of Gravity and Other Myths, presenting a new show called The Mirror at La Tahoe this week. You are working on the design elements of this show, so the visuals that we're going to be seeing. Can you tell me about what you're really proud of, or something that was hard to conceive, but you pulled it off? What are we going to be looking at that has your signature on it?
Yeah, so the design was really inspired by kind of traditional theatres. So we have this big proscenium arch frame that we kind of, I can't remember the exact terminology, but we called it like it's almost the skeleton of a proscenium arch. It's the inner workings of a theatre. So it's this kind of traced lines of LED panels that look like a beautiful old proscenium arch of a theater, but they have this kind of digital aesthetic. And we also use things like photography tools, like things that are designed to kind of make you look beautiful as set elements, like lights and reflectors and LED bars. So it's quite sparse, but it's quite rich. I would say the key element of the show that I really enjoyed working with, we use a system of live feed cameras and a digital LED wall that moves around the stage. It acts as a lighting source, and it also acts as a live feed camera. So we have these little selfie cameras that the acrobats use to look in, to do things, to position around the stage, that give you a little different perspective of what might be happening. So while you're watching the piece from front on, there might be a camera angle from somewhere else that shows the close-ups of someone's face or the wings of the theater or some other kind of perspective that you wouldn't normally have. And that's a really cool piece it's quite a complicated piece of technology, but it's a really cool element to the show that really helps bring some of those concepts I was talking about to life.
I wanted to ask about having to use selfie sticks. The acrobats, who are so focused on the precision of their movements and their communication with the other acrobats, and then you're like, but we're also going to be using selfie sticks. What was their reaction?
Well, like everything, every new kind of element that we bring into the training room floor, initially it's excitement. And we have a bit of playtime where we see, oh, what kind of things can we do? What kind of shots look cool doing acrobatics? And then there's a phase of coming to terms with, well, what's actually possible on stage and what's going to get in the way and what's safe and what's dangerous. And that's a little bit more now boring and pragmatic. And then you get to a stage where you have all these really amazing, interesting tools at your disposal to put on stage. And yeah, there's one scene in particular where we it's different theater to theater, but we roam around the whole theater with the selfie stick and climb on each other, and that's all, it's all to do with kind of pop culture and pop references, and the singer in the show is kind of singing all these beautiful songs.
It sounds like it's going to be super entertaining. I cannot wait to see it. Lachlan, thank you so much for getting up early for us all the way in Adelaide, Australia, and joining us here on the radio in Montreal. When are you coming back to Montreal, by the way?
I think it's got to be sooner rather than later. I can't stay away for that long. I'm not sure exactly when I'm coming back. The team's coming. Are they there now? I think they're there now or soon. I think they're about to fly in. So make sure you come down and check them out. And I'll have FOMO back here in Adelaide.
It's going to be winter in Australia soon, and we're heading into spring and summer, so you should come soon rather than later. Thanks so much for coming on Upstage.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
That was Lachlan Binns, a founder of Gravity and Other Myths and a designer on the Troupe's show The Mirror. I reached him in Adelaide earlier this week, and I saw the show's opening last night at Le Tohu. It was electric, somber, but cheekily playful all at once. And there's a wonderful moment blending pop songs and a selfie stick. It's going to have you tapping your toe and singing along. You can catch The Mirror from now until March the 3rd. Tickets and more information at letohu.ca, or you can call 514-376-8648. I'm Sarah Day, your host. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week, but we should be again live in studio for next week on Leap Year Day, February 29th. Still to come on this evening's show, we're going to learn about the Iranian poet Ferdowsi. There is a writer and director here in Montreal who's been fascinated by those stories for years, and he's written a play, a sprawling play, that covers the work in Ferdowsi's work, the Shahnameh. We'll learn more about that before the end of the hour. But now, anarchist theater artist and musician Norman Navratsky. He got in touch with me earlier this month to mention that his play about a historic figure from the Ukrainian independence movement is now online. Norman was inspired by the story of Marusia Nikiforova and wrote a play named after her, with the subhead of Ukraine's legendary anarchist warrior. Starring Ukrainian actor Maria Hadugyak, it was performed in spring of last year at La Sala Rosa. I spoke with Norman about the show at the time. But with the second anniversary of Russia's invasion against Ukraine this weekend, Norman has released a filmed version of the play for audiences online. It's available for free on YouTube, of course, with a request to donate to an organization that Norman supports, a Ukrainian volunteer network called the Solidarity Collective, currently operating in resistance to Russian forces. Our contributor Xander Chung spoke with Norman Navratsky earlier this week to learn about the life and work of Marusia Nikiforova and to chat about anarchist theater. Here is their conversation.
So anarchism, it gets a lot of your average day-to-day discourse around similar to that of progressivism. You know, it's a nice idea, often treated uniquely with the same kind of, you know, disregard and derision, contention from both sides of the aisle. A critical look at, you know, whether the state itself is even worthwhile to maintain, as if it is often an idea that is left by the wayside. The arbitrariety of borders, the lines on the ground, the presumption that some kind of pride in a colorful, wavy fabric in the sky that we call a flag is relevant to our day-to-day lives. And this kind of brings me to our guest today, Norman Navratsky, made a YouTube debut with a filmed version of his play, Marusia Nikiforova, Ukraine's legendary anarchist warrior, which debuted February 15th. The show itself will be available till the 29th. Norman, we're 5 days in. How do you feel?
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. This is actually the filmed version of a performance that premiered this past May. We decided to put it up now, and I'm absolutely I'm in heaven because it's getting great reviews online. People emailing me, you know, really positive comments. And the overall objective, of course, is we're hoping to raise some money for a very important grassroots organization in Ukraine to help them as they mark the second year of the Russian invasion. So, but I'm feeling absolutely great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you for coming onto the show and shining a light on, you know, this organization, the Solidarity Collective in Ukraine. What can you tell us about this organization?
It's a volunteer grassroots network of different organizations that work on the ground, providing both like tactical support for people on the front lines, but also helping people behind the lines. And it's specifically an anti-authoritarian grassroots community organization. And who they are aiding specifically on the front lines are other anti-authoritarians, feminists, environmentalists, trade unionists, anarchists, peace activists, you know, animal rights activists, people who normally would hang out here in Montreal at the Casa del Popolo, whatever, at the Sala Rosa or even work at CKUT, are kind of people who are actually on the front lines now with guns in their hands or acting as medics. So money is going to provide them with necessary equipment, but also helping other people, ordinary people caught in the horror of the war. So providing them with food and blankets and medical assistance and things like that.
A lot of us like to, you know, tout anti-fascism as just a core-centric belief. And really, the opposition to this kind of invasion, definitely helping push against that kind of, break through the current situation between Ukraine and Russia. I would imagine actually helping with not only safeguarding the people on the ground pushing against the authoritarian regime, but also, helping where it also matters with the victims of that war. It's a multipolar front, really, and we often forget about that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And the support I'm hoping that I can generate by, allowing people to watch the performance for free, the short film, it's only 30 minutes, watch it for free on YouTube. But I'm encouraging people to make a voluntary donation to the organization in Ukraine, Solidarity Collective. So I'm suggesting people can give like 10, 20, 50 bucks, whatever. And it will go a long ways there, helping them.
Of course. And now, like, turning to your show, as you mentioned, you're getting really great reviews. Now you got some really great reactions when it debuted for the 16th Annual Anarchist Theater Festival last year. What can you tell us about the show for the uninitiated?
I present the life of this extraordinary woman who is called Marussia Nikiforova, an actual woman born, raised, died in Ukraine in the early 1900s. She became an anarchist at age 15, started robbing banks at age 16, was imprisoned, escaped prison, joined anarchist groups, agitating among factory workers and peasants, and eventually had to flee, went to Paris, studied under the great Rodin, studied at a military academy in Paris, returned to Ukraine, formed and led her own army of 500, had her own bodyguards, traveled in armored trains with guards, and had thousands of people who she could rally around her to fight at any particular moment. And she played a key role in the Russian-Ukrainian revolution that happened then, and she fought against the white Russians, she fought against Bolsheviks, she fought against Ukrainian nationalists, and at one point she was fighting with other anarchists. So we present her life story, and her life story is presented within the context of a military tribunal, because that's what happened. They set her up, third military tribunal, and she is reliving her life, listening to all the accusations.
And it's often that we have a tendency of, re-examining these people in history through, these legal processes and whatnot. I believe it was David Graeber that compared bureaucracy to this like tumor-esque appendage that just existed to perpetuate itself. And I find it very interesting that we're using the frame, this bureaucratic legal system, as a way to examine her life story. I wonder if you can speak a bit to that.
She lived underground most of her life, except for the last 2 years, too short life, extraordinary life. And those 2 short years were the years where she was most in the public eye, on the fronts, everywhere, on her horse, on the train, by car, wherever. She was actually more popular, better known than Nestor Makhno, who is like one of, considered one of the key figures of Ukrainian anarchism historically. But because she was a woman, she was never given the same recognition. Her achievements were never given the same recognition. Her legacy was never acknowledged again because she was a woman and also because she was an anarchist. So the military tribunal, for me, was a device on stage. There's a voice portraying a military officer who gives her history, capsule history, summarizes like key events in her life, but those are often associated with the charges leveled against her. And she, on stage, you see her, okay, this is how she was. This is who she is. She doesn't deny she's an anarchist. She doesn't deny she fought the state. She doesn't deny she robbed banks and burned down prisons and burned bombs and everything else, because she's an anarchist and she's not afraid of saying that.
It's actually really refreshing to have a piece of work that is unapologetically stouting this position, because we often, especially nowadays, you know, you have your Reddit anarchism debate streamers and so on and so forth that kind of try to couch a lot of anarchist theory and ideas in more legitimate abstracted terms. We have people referring to it as anarcho-syndicalism or libertarian socialism and whatnot. And I'm actually kind of curious, considering that we have so many different camps and so many different, you know, I guess, hands in the cookie jar when it comes to these ideas. What is anarchism to you, for, you know, the audience? And, you know, how does that motivate your show, your art specifically?
Well, you're absolutely right, Xandra, that you could have 100 anarchists in the room and you will have 100 different definitions of what is anarchism. Marusia Nikiforova, for example, considered herself, called herself an anarcho-communist. That's one position. Anarcho-syndicalism, anarcho-communism, anarcho-individualism, anarcho-feminism, anarcho-environmentalism. I mean, the list is very, very long. I've been an anarchist most of my life, ever since I was a kid. I think I discovered my first anarchist book at the high school library on a stack, and I'm like, what is this all about? The anarchists. And it was a compendium, an anthology of anarchist writings of dozens of like big name anarchists from throughout history. And I took this book home as a 13, 14 year old kid. And I'm like, whoa, this is me. I believe this. I think this. I'm in favor of this. All the concepts of, you know, self-management, of no bosses, of no masters, of no gods, of nobody oppressing anybody else, of nobody wielding power over anyone else, of a collective movement for collective liberation that also guaranteed individual personal freedom, a denunciation of capitalism, denunciation of the state, denunciation of religion, denunciation of, you know, every sexism, transphobia, homophobia, racism, ageism, whatever, ableism, whatever it might be. And as a teenager, I was, all the lights went on at once in my little brain. And they're still going off in my little brain, and the lights still align, and I still consider myself an anarchist after all these years. And what it means for me in terms of my art is I try to incorporate basic precepts in my work to share these ideas, to contribute to public discourse about the concepts of anarchism, because nobody talks about it publicly. It's not a discussion that's, you know, you could read about in the daily news online, or hear about on TV, or necessarily hear about in podcasts discussed in detail. So I try to use my art, my theater, my music, my poetry, my books to explore anarchism, but to explore it as creatively as I can, to make it as hopefully as interesting and engaging for people who are uninitiated, who know nothing about it, to make it as attractive to them as possible, so they will then ask questions of, oh, so you mean there's another way to do things? There's another way to look at the world? There's another lens, you know, we can like borrow, and maybe this will help us understand what's going on out there, maybe help inspire us about what needs to be done to change things, to make the world a better place. Because that's what Marusi Nikiforova was all about. You know, she was fighting for people who had nothing, people who were starving, people who were worked to the bone, people who were oppressed by, you know, the Tsarist regime, then subsequently repressed by the Bolshevik regime. She was fighting for everyone's right to live a beautiful, free life.
That is a beautiful sentiment. And I am absolutely floored with the prospect of not only just seeing the show, but engaging with more anarchist art. We don't see enough of it. And of course, just to shed a light on it, there is an anarchist theater festival that happens in Montreal shortly before, you know, the much larger Fringe Fest. What can you tell us about your experiences with the festival?
Well, I'm one of the co-founders, the Montreal International Anarchist Theater Festival. It's the biggest anarchist theater festival in the world, and it's the only international anarchist theater festival. And we've been going for all 17 years now. And for 17 years, we've brought in all kinds of big theater names from around the world. People like the Living Theater from New York, Bread and Puppet, big names from France, from Germany, from the Philippines, from Chile, anarchist theater troupes who come here. We have no money. We have no state sponsorship, no corporate sponsorship, no grants, no nothing. It's all money out of our pockets and the pockets of friends and the money we gather at the door from ticket sales. And we put on theater that's professional theater, but also we try and give local amateur theater a space on stage because we want to promote local anarchist theater. And anybody who's interested in concepts of anarchism and wants to try out something new on the stage, we see it, we read the script, we like it, we give them a chance, we put it on. So 17 years we've been doing this, mostly at the Sala Rosa. And that's quite a legacy of troupes from around the world who performed here.
The festival occurs when?
Generally in May. We're taking this year off, but we'll be back in 2025 in May, just before the Anarchist Book Fair, during the month of anarchy in Montreal, which the mayor has proclaimed officially as May is the month of anarchy in Montreal.
Excellent. I can't wait to finally actually attend some shows, and who knows, maybe I'll throw in one of my own works there. Norman, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Been a pleasure.
That was our own Xander Chung speaking with Norman Navrotsky. You can catch Norman's play, Marusia Nikiforova, Ukraine's legendary anarchist warrior. It's online for another week until February 29th. Visit YouTube to see the show. You can search for Norman Navrotsky, Nawrocki. It was filmed at the Montreal International Anarchist Theater Festival in spring 2023 at La Sala Rosa. Norman is also raising money for the Ukrainian volunteer network Solidarity Collectives as they continue to resist the Russian invasion. You can make a donation and visit them online at solidaritycollectives.org. I'm Sarah Day. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week.
Tu as explosé ton forfait cellulaire pour écouter ton ami ventiler sur ses parents et sur son acné?
Tellement.
Avec ton écoute, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
I've had the great pleasure of getting to learn about the author and poet Ferdowsi from our next guest. He was born in 940 AD and is credited with helping to revive interest in the Persian language and history. Ferdowsi wrote the Shahnameh, known as one of the world's longest epic poems to be written by a single person, and today admirers and scholars regard him as the poet who rescued Iran.
Montreal artist Sina A. Surin has been captivated by Ferdowsi's stories for years, tales about the warrior Rostam, and more stories about love, justice, and tragedy. Sina has adapted his tales into a multidisciplinary play with an expansive ensemble cast, delving into Persian myths and stories. His play is titled The Keeper, and it's presented by Rise Theatre, set to open this coming Tuesday, February 27th at the Alnef Theatre. It's located in La Fontaine Park on Calixa-Lavallée. I spoke with Sina earlier this week. Welcome, Sina, to Upstage. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Keeper sounds like an ambitious project. Why don't we start with the roots of this story that you've written? It's inspired by Ferdowsi, who was a great Persian poet.
Yes, Ferdowsi is a hallmark in Persian literature. He spent 30 years working on one book, which turned that book to be the longest poetry ever written by any human being ever across global literature. So it's massive. And one of the essential things that he has done is that he has kept the same rhythm in his verses across the board. So it's a constant rhythm no matter what's happening in the story. And he has created a story that's basically almost all Persian words, which is essential in a context when we are thinking about a land that at that time and around that time was being ruled by non-Persians, and that sort of culture and language was being eradicated slowly.
And tell me about how you came into contact with his writing, like why this interests you as an artist.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's essential about Ferdowsi is that he's just so good at what he's doing that every time you read, you just can't help yourself with loving him. Aside from that, of course, you know, I'm Persian, so there's that connection with it as well, and the huge amount of material, because you know, Shahnameh is not like one story; it's a compendium of tales that originate to before Persians were Persian, before Iranians were Iranians. It's massively old and distant.
So this would be like akin to someone who's writing a long, long, long time ago. Like, what would that era be? That's like in the BC or BCE era.
Oh, no, actually, so what's interesting is that, so because Ferdowsi is not so much of he does has his own personal takes on these stories, but he's not a creator, original author, as much as he is someone who's gathering them all and organizing them.
He's a curator.
He is a curator, exactly. And he's gathering a long history of oral tradition and other written texts that have been lost now. And he's bringing them together in his version with his rhythm and all that. And so he himself died actually 1,000 years ago. And I think it was around the anniversary of his 1,000 years death that I finished this play, which was something interesting for myself, at least. I don't know. I wasn't planning on it, but it happened. And I felt, you know, sometimes you find some meaning in certain things. And but the stories that he's talking about, oh, by his own time, they would have been 4,000 years old.
Right. Yeah. So I don't want to say that there's an analog necessarily for him, because obviously Ferdowsi stands on his own 2 feet as a literary figure. But for someone who is not as experienced with his work, like myself, I'm thinking of like the Grimm brothers, who were compiling stories that have been told for hundreds of years. And we associate stories with their names and their ability to collect stories. Ferdowsi is a similar figure for Persian culture.
Grimm brothers is a good example. But I think another huge thing that a lot of people would understand is Homer. You know, Homer's Iliad and Odyssey, specifically Iliad, is just like, you know, Shahnameh is legendary. It has its roots in actual events in history, but they have been glorified and just grandeured a lot. So, you know, the same way that there is an actual city of Troy, there a lot of the events of Shahnameh are actually real. They've just been exaggerated, and there are times that it's not. But yeah.
So you're working with all these really big stories that cover a lot of ground. Was there one particular story that is something you've always really loved that you really wanted to fit into The Keeper itself? Can you tell us one of Ferdowsi's quote unquote stories?
Well, I mean, I'm a huge lover of, I have to say, I love all the stories that I've kept, and I loved a lot of the stories that I didn't keep in this play, because again, it's 60,000 plus lines of poetry and we have like 90 minutes of story time on the play. But one of my favorite stories is the story of the lovers named Bijan and Manije. And these are just one of the many couple lover couples in the Shahnameh. And what I like about it is that it's not a story in which, you know, the princess is sitting on top of the tower waiting for the man to come and help him. But rather, it's one of those things that they both go for each other. And interestingly enough, Manisha in the story actually drugs and kidnaps the man she loves because she doesn't want to lose him. So it's interesting. And again, it goes with the sort of overall more active role that you see with women in Iranian culture.
I'm speaking with the writer Sina A. Sorin, who is presenting The Keeper at the Artneuf Theater in Parc La Fontaine coming up later this month. And we're just talking about the stories that you ended up molding into your own play, The Keeper itself. So what do we as the audience get to see? What's the structure that, like, at the very start of the show?
Yeah, I mean, so what you get to see is a story is something that is human. And I'm, again, sort of like doing Tacitus, who said, I am human and therefore I consider nothing human foreign to me. And I do believe of that, which is essential part of what I've done with, I tried at least to do with this work, is to bring a tale that no matter where you're from, you can connect. And this is also reflected in our team. You know, our team, we're all over the place. It's a lot of different cultures, a lot of different backgrounds. But stories resonate with human beings. And this is something that we are exploring there. And not only that, we're also exploring the nature of stories. You know, what happens and how is it going that in a certain dark time, someone talks about a past that was good times to just keep hope alive for a future that's uncertain, you know, and the nature of these reflections of reality through the mind of an author into his pages and his books. So we have tales within tales happening as we explore the life of the author and the stories that he tells.
You're going to have singing on stage. There'll be some video effects as well. It sounds pretty original music, we can't forget. Pretty ambitious. And there's also an homage to Iranian theater itself. So what elements are you borrowing from that tradition for this piece?
We have, as you said, live music. The video projection itself is also original stuff that had been designed by, again, our artist in our group, Odin Rezai, who is just doing one marvelous things with his effects and stuff. In terms of the inspiration based on the Iranian thing, in Iranian theatric tradition, which is actually says a lot about the importance of this book in Iranian literature, is that there's a school of theater called Shahnameh Khani, or literally just reading Shahnameh, basically, in which it's a narrator who just tells these events, tell these actions across using the rhythm of Shahnameh, you know, because it's a heroic rhythm. So go, it already automatically draws you in with that rhythm of epicness, and he tells stories and he plays multiple roles at the same time on stage. So it's a very interesting take on this sort of storytelling with almost nothing, with just yourself, your body, and the words, which is something that we're exploring, but at the same time we are also really using and going as far as we can with effects and actors to complement it. So it's, again, the show has a cast of 18 actors. So it's quite massive with all of
ambitious.
These. Yes.
What made you want to take on such a massive production? Especially as I'm getting, like, I don't know if you'd call yourself an emerging artist, someone who's trying to, you know, set their name and their style. It's a big project.
Yeah, in terms of why I'm attracted to these large pieces. Partly, I just don't know, I just am. Another reason is I think it goes with the very core nature of theater, which is the reason that theater has survived despite, you know, all these other ways of medias, of performance medias, which have their own places, but, you know, theater is still survived, is that physical aspect of it, is the fact that there are human bodies in close proximity to each other in a space. And I think that reflects not only with the presence of the audience with the actors, but also with the actors and themselves. And there's a sense of community always involved. So that always interests me personally.
Speaking with playwright and director Sina A. Sorin, talking about The Keeper, which will be opening later this month at the Art Neuf Theater. What are you most looking forward to your audiences seeing or getting to appreciate in the show?
I'll let them decide that for themselves, mostly. But for me, I think I would really appreciate it if, first of all, they just enjoy stories. And this is something that's essential. I think a lot of times we forget as storytellers that sometimes we just are here to tell a story, and just a good story in itself has a value. You don't have to preach anything at times, you don't have to do anything, but just let people sit down and enjoy a story. So connect with another place and time, that's essential for me. And also I think to reflect on themselves, to see how stories have shaped their own lives, because we have, you know, stories have shaped how I've grown up to be as a human being, the same way it has helped you grow out the way that you are. So reflecting on that, I think it's essential.
Were you able to hire other Iranian actors and people for your crew for this performance?
It's always about someone who is capable of doing what they're supposed to be doing and can make it happen. So that's been my overall rule. But you know, with this production, of course, we have a few Iranians involved at certain places. We have non-Iranians, we have non-Iranians singing Iranians, so that's going to be fun. It's a team effort across the globe.
It must be a tremendous learning experience for everyone involved.
Yeah, and they've been getting tired of me constantly talking about histories and culture and stuff like that, but I think it's landing. People are understanding what's happening.
It's been really great to meet you. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Sarah. I hope to see you there, and I hope all your listeners also come and enjoy the good show.
That was Sina A. Sorin, the director and playwright of the play The Keeper. It opens this Tuesday, February 27th, and runs until March the 2nd at the Art Neuf Theater. It's located on Calixa Lavallee Road in La Fontaine Park in the Plateau. Head to showtix4u.com for tickets and more information. That's showtix4u.com. You can also follow Rise Theater on Instagram and Facebook and check out their website at risetheater.ca. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio. Tonight you heard my guests, Lachlan Binns of Graffiti and Other Myths. Their current show, The Mirror, is on now at La Tohu. Norman Navratsky in conversation with Xander Chung. Check out Norman's play about a Ukrainian anarchist fighter on YouTube. It's online until February 29th. You can stream it for free and encouraged to make a donation to a Ukrainian volunteer network. More information at the video. And also, Sina A. Sorin, their play, The Keepers, begins on Tuesday at the Art Neuf Theater. A very big thank you to all of my guests, and of course to Xander for joining us this week. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Follow us for updates, images of our guests, and more on Instagram at UpstageCKUT. If you're looking for things to do this weekend, check out 9 Lives at Mainline Theatre, a remount of a storytelling show from Fringe Festival last week. Of course, we also have The Flood wrapping up this weekend at Centaur Theatre, a powerful play about feminism and history set in an underground basement prison in turn-of-the-century Toronto. And as well, of course, The Mirror at La Tohu. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure the show gets to air. And thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah Day. I'll speak with you next time, February 29th, Leap Year Day, on Upstage here at CKUT 90.3 and CKUT.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters with my friend, Fortner Anderson.
T'es occupé de ton ami qui saignait du nez après qu'il soit rentré dans une porte patio fermée, sans rire de lui?
Évidemment.
Avec ton empathie, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
TD and Production Nuit d'Afrique present Women of the World Raise Their Voices, 5 special concert evenings from February 1st to March 8th. Don't miss the grand premiere. Lidl's Cameroonian Slam, Brazilian songwriter Bia Pereira, Lorraine Klassen's 40-year career anniversary, The Roots Daughters Sound System, and Cora Virtuoso, Sona Jobarte. Discover the full program on festivalnuitafrique.com. This is a CKUT color presentation. D and Production Nuit d'Afrique present Women of the World Raise Their Voices, 5 special concert evenings from February 1st to March 8th. Don't miss the grand premiere. Lidl's Cameroonian Slam, Brazilian songwriter Bia Pereira, Lorraine Klassen's 40-year career anniversary, The Roots Daughters Sound System, and Cora Virtuoso, Sona Jobarte. Discover the full program on festivalnuitafrique.com. This is a CKUT color presentation.
Good evening and welcome to the February 22nd edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show we have a lecture by Chris Hedges. He's an award-winning independent journalist who has covered the Middle East for many years. Noam Chomsky says Chris Hedges has compiled a remarkable record of reporting and analysis. He has been an incomparable source of insight and understanding, both in his outstanding career as a courageous journalist and in his penetrating commentary on world events. He is the host of the Chris Hedges Report and the author of many books, including his latest, which is The Greatest Evil is War. So here's tonight's lecture. It was recorded on January 18th of this year in Monmouth Junction, New Jersey. Its title is Biden, Gaza Genocide in Israel by Chris Hedges. Here it is.
Biden presidency, which ironically may have signed its own political